Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome all of you to our presentation. This is Virtual Audits in a Post-Pandemic World. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Our topics for today, we're going to begin with unpacking where virtual audit policy comes from, the high-level requirements that PJR has to abide by. We're going to discuss how an audit gets approved to be virtual in the first place. We're going to go over some new controls and some oversight that were introduced this year. We're going to review the concept of hybrid audits. We'll take a look at expectations for audit reporting and not conformances, a couple of concluding remarks, and then your questions. Now, in terms of official policy on remote auditing, like many other things, we have to rely on the requirements that come from the IAF, that's International Accreditation Forum. And there are two primary documents that are applicable in this situation. Now, the first one I've got listed here is ID3. That stands for Informative Document 3. Now, this is management of extraordinary event or circumstances affecting accreditation bodies, certification assessment bodies, and certified organizations. Now, that document was very much in play during the pandemic itself. It has since become less relevant, and we are not referring to it to the extent that we were before. The more important document, the mandatory document, MD, is mandatory document 4, which is the use of information and communication technology, or ICT, for auditing and assessment purposes. Now, incidentally, both of these documents are public domain. Any IAF publication is free to obtain from the IAF website. So if you want to read MD4 for yourself, if you want to read ID3 for yourself, these can be obtained at the IAF website, or you can simply do a Google search and you will find them very quickly. Now, ID3 and MD4 both require that PJR contact our client and conduct what's called a risk-based assessment on whether or not a virtual audit is possible. Now, we have established a special form. Several of you on our call today have probably already seen it. It's our F108 ICT, and this enables us to gather the necessary information and make the specified risk-based assessment. Now, the current version of the F108 ICT, it's actually gone through somewhat of an overhaul. It's now broken down into three parts. Part A is completed by your PJR scheduler. It's completed internally here at PJR headquarters, and only if applicable. Part B is only completed if Part A is not. Part A is completed by you, the client, the party representing or requesting, rather, the virtual audit. And then Part C is mandatory. That's completed by the party requesting the virtual audit in all cases. And we're going to get into what's in these three parts over the next several slides here. Now, in Part A, we have provided a space for our internal team to capture some of the remote audit justifications that originate from PJR's end. So for example, if we have an auditor that is immunocompromised and cannot travel, if we have an audit coming up that is strictly going to be administrative areas, perhaps a revisit audit that's being done for majors that were written against management review, If it's a hybrid audit where we're only asking for some of the audit to be done remotely, or if there is a travel warning that our internal team is aware of, something that they've researched on their own. So again, Part A is filled out by a representative of PJR and is not to be filled out by the client. Now, when you receive the F-108 ICT, if you note that Part A has been left blank, this is your indication that you need to fill out Part B. So let's go over now what's in Part B. Now, within Part B, we have provided a list of approved justifications for a remote audit. Now, these include a positive COVID test amongst your on-site team members. Now, please note, we will only accept COVID as a reasoning if we are given evidence of a test. Now, this can be redacted evidence, and only if the audit is set to take place within the next 14 days. We will also accept as justification that you have a remote or administrative business model. So if you don't have any manufacturing, if your team is on computers all day long, you know, if you're a staffing service or data processing or software development, what have you, those are great business models for remote audits. So we've provided a space where that can be indicated. If you are claiming a no visitors policy, again, we are requiring evidence of the no visitors policy, and we need to see evidence that it is current and that it has been applied to all other potential visitors. So your customers, your suppliers, what have you. Now, we have trained our auditors to verify enforcement of that policy during their audit. Obviously, fair is fair. If it's a no visitors policy, that means everybody. Obviously, applicable governmental travel restrictions, again, with proof. It may be that you're requesting a hybrid audit. We'll be giving some details on that a little bit later in the presentation. And we will consider other justifications. Now, in terms of justifications options that will not be accepted, we will not approve a remote audit on the basis that you want to save money on auditor travel, or that last year's audit was virtual and you want it to be virtual again this year, or that it's more convenient for your team, or that your salesperson promised you a remote audit. You must understand our ongoing preference is going to be for an on-site audit, particularly for organizations that manufacture a tangible product. Now, moving on to Part C of our document, our F-108 ICT, this is the eligibility portion. And in Part C, we have a series of questions that we ask that get into kind of the technical aspects of the remote audit. And these are the actual questions that appear. We want to know, firstly, are you comfortable working with either GoToMeeting or Microsoft Teams? Are 100% of your records maintained in an electronic fashion? Are you going to be running normal operations at the time of the audit? Do you have sufficient hardware and Wi-Fi coverage or cell phone signal to audit all areas, including production, if that's something we're going to be looking at? Are you going to accept a cell phone or tablet camera live streaming from the areas of the facility that will be assessed virtually? Is our auditor going to be permitted to perform live video interviews with all the staff that are necessary, including management, process owners, et cetera? We will not accept telephone interviews as a substitute. If these need to be video, they need to essentially replicate the experience of the auditor being there in person. Do you have the technical capability to support a remote audit? Can you troubleshoot? Have you been audited virtually in the past? Was it a positive value-added experience? Have there been changes in your organization since your last audit? And these three are new. Do you consent to PGR recording all or some of the audit activity for later review? to ensure that the audit process was carried out in accordance with our policies and procedures. Do you consent to PGR management staff potentially joining the virtual audit to validate its integrity? And lastly, do you agree to a technology test session in advance of the audit? Now, there's a lot of key takeaways from this. Firstly, there are many reasons to have a virtual audit. And our long-term plan was always to get past the COVID-driven emergency use arrangement. Now, if you're not aware, the pandemic was declared over in May of 2023. So COVID is over from the perspective of the industry. But we have a lot of clients with business models that are a great fit for remote auditing. The key is to capture a satisfactory rationale in a traceable manner. Also, clients have to understand that they have a responsibility to make sure the remote audit is successful. Remote auditing is viewed as a privilege, and it is not a right for either the client or for the auditor. And again, on-site audits are the default position in making audit arrangements. And thus, we've had to step up our rhetoric in terms of the client selling us on their ability to not only participate in a remote audit, but for that remote audit to be as effective as an on-site audit. Now, to make our position perfectly clear, there are three conditions that must be met. Firstly, there must be live chat over a person-to-person interface with live sharing of the auditee screen. Secondly, the records must be 100% or nearly 100% electronic. We will potentially allow exceptions to that. And production assessments must take place in person. This must be a hybrid audit unless there is a documented current risk to auditor and/or client health. Now, we've added, as I mentioned, some new oversight of the remote audit process. And I'd like to go over now the two new layers that were added, that being random witness assessments and recording of audits. So let's go ahead and unpack these two new controls a bit more thoroughly. Random witness assessments have been positioned as a way of demonstrating control over the remote audit process and ensuring auditor rigor. So if your audit is selected, you won't be told when the witness assessor is going to be joining the audit, only that it is possible that they will join the audit. Now, if your audit is selected, it's really not going to mean anything in terms of how the audit is executed. The witness assessor will have their camera off, they'll have their microphone muted, and they will absolutely not interfere in any way, shape, or form with the audit process. Now, if you refuse to consent to a witness assessor, understand that your request for a remote audit will almost certainly be rejected. We've also instituted a potential for a recording of the audit event to be kept and then shared with our internal team. Now, those requests will be shared in advance. If your audit is selected for recording, we will let you know in advance. Now, again, refusal on your part to consent to a recording or a partial recording will likely lead to the request for a remote audit being rejected. Now, one of the newer controls that's been implemented also is the technology test session. Now, this is an event that's actually mandated by IAF MD4 in section 422, which reads as follows. When ICT is proposed for audit or assessment activities, the application review shall include a check that the client and/or audit assessment body have the necessary infrastructure to support the use of the ICT proposed. So it's this check that they're talking about that we've christened the technology test session. Now, the technology test session has to be completed in advance of the actual audit, preferably 24 hours in advance or more. And it must utilize the same systems that will be used on audit day. The technology test session that results in a negative recommendation will mean that your audit must be conducted on site. Now, PJR Technical Management may participate in technology test sessions at our discretion. I'd like to talk for a few minutes about hybrid audits. Now, a hybrid audit means that a portion of your audit is done virtually and a portion of your audit is done on site. Now, this is a great option that offers some auditor quality of life, some cost savings, and some scheduling flexibility. Now, if your scope includes any form of manufacturing or product storage, what have you, and you're requesting a remote audit for anything other than an actual health emergency, we are going to push for the hybrid audit option. Now, it is possible, if you're on a surveillance audit, that we may be able to plan things out so that we don't have to see manufacturing on that particular audit, which makes a remote audit more likely. Now, here are some possible hybrid audit scenarios. Let's say that you have a five-day audit to be performed. Now, the first 2 days get done remotely and include the administrative areas, management review, internal audit, sales, what have you. Then the auditor gets on a plane and comes to see you in person for the last 3 days that include production and other key technical areas like design. Second possibility, let's say that you have a four-day audit to be performed and you want it done in 2 calendar days. Well, we could have an auditor come on site to do the production aspects of the audit and a second auditor virtually doing the administrative aspects. And we can then get the audit done in 2 calendar days. Let's say that the situation is you had an on-site audit that resulted in multiple majors and requires a revisit. We could potentially do the revisit virtually if the majors are rooted in administrative areas and don't require an on-site assessment. Also, one final possible scenario, let's say that you're having an audit and we find out there's been a rather significant headcount increase. That's leading to an additional half day of required audit time. That additional audit time potentially could be done concurrently by another remote auditor. So that there's lots of possibilities for remote audits. Now, it's very important that we distinguish what a virtual audit is not. And it is not accomplished by the auditor being emailed a bunch of information for offsite review. Among other things, doing that would represent a violation of IEF MD4, where it states that adequate controls need to be in place to avoid abuses that could compromise the integrity of the audit assessment process. If the client is selecting all audit samples themselves, that principle is not met. And that includes a situation where everything is given via Dropbox or Google Drive. For the audit to be truly virtual and meet the requirements from IEF and ISO, the auditing technique must permit the auditor to assess the system in the exact same way as if they were sitting in the client's facility. And that means random sampling and all of the other auditing techniques that are mandated by IEF and things like ISO 17021 and 19011. To be very clear, offsite auditing is not the same as virtual auditing. Now, if we are in a situation where an onsite audit cannot be done, if we have a health emergency and a virtual audit isn't possible either, if you don't have electronic records or some other challenge, we have a couple of options based on ID3. And ID3 is in play if there is an emergency, if there's something that is preventing an on-site audit. We can delay your surveillance assessment. If you're in a recertification situation, it's even possible for us to extend your current certificate. So we do have options if we can do neither an on-site nor a virtual audit. You just need to reach out and get us involved. Now, as mentioned, we want to try to limit virtual auditing to administrative areas. And there's a lot of things that can be looked at virtually, effectively, with the same rigor as if we were on site. So I've given kind of a partial list here, things like management review and complaint resolution, product design, even if it's rooted in computer systems, training, website review, obviously, what have you. So there's a lot of things that can be successfully looked at in the context of a virtual audit. Now, random sampling, as I mentioned, is indeed still required. It's vital to the integrity of the audit process that random sampling be utilized. Now, screen sharing is a privilege. It enables it for the auditor to review your screen and select what they want to see. And that is what's required. The auditor does need to be in a position where they are selecting their own samples. Again, offsite auditing, virtual auditing, not the same thing. Now, in terms of what you can expect for your audit report, if the entire audit was done virtually and there is no on-site portion, you should still expect the full audit package to be turned over to you in accordance with our established policy on package preparation, which means you should be getting your audit report, any nonconformances, your audit plan, and the acceptance of findings form. Now, if you're in a hybrid audit, if there's going to be an on-site portion to be done later, your package will be provided upon completion of the on-site portion. Now, obviously, we can provide documented verification that the virtual portion was completed if you happen to need it. In terms of nonconformances, any virtual audit issued nonconformance will still follow our established protocol for resolution. You're still going to provide the full four-part response: correction, extent analysis, root cause, corrective action. Now, please note, if you're in a hybrid audit situation, and let's say you've got an audit that's virtual Monday and Tuesday and on-site Wednesday and Thursday, if you get a nonconformance during the virtual portion, you are not allowed to just fix it and show it to the auditor when they show up for the on-site portion of the audit. We still need the full documented response. And all timing requirements are still in effect. And that means from the full completion of the audit. So if you have a hybrid audit that's spread out over a two-week period, the timing kicks in at the point that the closing meeting takes place, when the audit is officially over. Obviously, sector-specific rules remain in effect in those situations as well. Now, we want to be reasonable in offering options to our clients to ensure a value-added audit experience, but we also have to be cognizant of industry requirements and ensure that we're not performing a remote audit with insufficient justification. We do hope that this is beneficial to you and that you're able to take advantage of a remote audit option to the extent possible. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a special presentation on our Pro 3 and related bylaws on promotion of your management system certification. This goes over all of the different rules and requirements for promoting that you're an ISO certified company. We also have a presentation called Your Ongoing Relationship with PJR. This is a kind of a special presentation on what to do if things are changing within your organization. And as an add-on, it also covers the dispute process. And we have a variety of webinars on a lot of other topics, covering things like corrective action, stage one audits, the various standards that we certify, and so forth. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at pjr.com. If you go to the bottom of the page and enter your email address in the provided space and click subscribe, you will be opted in for automatic updates on new webinars, changes to the standards, and other points of information. I do thank you for your time. As a reminder, Our presentation will be available for download shortly, probably within a couple of hours. The slides will be available, and the recording will be up on YouTube again. Give us just a couple of hours to get that up on our YouTube page. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions today. Janice Guy asks, if we have approval under revision 2 of the F-108 ICT, do we need to complete the form again? Janice, if you have an audit that's taking place in the next week or two, and it's already been approved to go virtual, then probably no, you don't need to fill out the paperwork again. But if you've got an audit coming up sometime this year, then yes, you will almost surely need to fill out the paperwork again. I'd say check with your scheduler on that specifically. Any other questions I can answer today? Okay, well, wishing everyone a great weekend. Stay safe and have a wonderful day, all of you.